immediately and stood very tall, as if willing away the pain. A tap on his side brought Entreri from his self-imposed meditation to find Regis standing beside him, holding forth a small potion bottle.
"Healing,"
the halfling offered, and when Entreri took it, he handed him a second vial.
"For the drow poison,"
he explained. Entreri settled comfortably as the first potion filled him with warmth, and he tipped a nod to Regis before quaffing the second. "Off," he said to Drizzt, "with all speed." And he started away once more. Drizzt looked all around. He didn't want to leave his friends in this dangerous place, not for a moment, but he knew that Entreri was right, and that Amber and hopefully Dahlia needed him. He dropped Talmaril and the enchanted quiver at Catibree's feet.
"You take it,"
she said. But Drizzt just shook his head and sprinted away, hustling to catch up to Entreri. Regis moved around the forge, inspecting the work areas and pocketing more than a few items in that magical pouch he carried. Brunner went to the mithril door, nodding. He knew what lay behind it. It would not open, however, and he could find no handle to try to pull it in. He put his shoulder against it and pushed, but he might as well have been pushing against the mountain itself. Drizzt and Entreri, too, had gone to that door first, then had rushed off to the far end of the room, angling down the corridor where some of the drow had run off. Wulfgar, much improved by Catibree's healing, sat up against the wall, resting easily and with Aegis Fang close at hand. If the drow came back in, he would stand against them. Beside him, Afafrenfir lay on his back, working his arms up into the air in small circles, and his hands working in circles of their own, fingers lifting and closing as he tried to reawaken muscles that had been dormant for days. His voice was still thin as he explained the monk technique of feigning death to Wulfgar and Catibree. Wulfgar listened intently and with an amused expression, for the warrior barbarian hadn't even learned the art of retreat, let alone faking his death to fool enemies. And Catibree did not listen at all, hardly aware of her surroundings. For in her head, the woman heard a call, quiet but insistent, a plea, and one from some being beyond her, some great creature, perhaps divine, though its mental intrusion seemed too foreign to be that of Mialiki's song. She didn't understand. She unwittingly clenched her hand. The woman leaned against the wall. Wulfgar's laughter interrupted her thoughts, and she turned to regard him, then followed his gaze and Afafrenfir's to the great forge centering the room and to Regis, who was trying to drag an enormous warhammer, a weapon made for a giant king, it seemed, and indeed it had been crafted for just that reason from the work table.
"What are ye about, Rumblebelly?"
Brunner called from across the way. Regis lifted up his small belt pouch, which seemed barely large enough to contain his hand, up to his wrist. With a wry grin, Regis slipped the bag over the end of the weapon's long handle, and smiling all the wider, the mischievous halfling continued sliding the pouch up, the shaft disappearing within, seeming as if the magic was somehow devouring it.
"And how are ye to get the hammer's head over that little bag, magical or not?"
Brunner asked. For indeed it didn't seem possible.
"Well, come help me then,"
Regis argued back, and realizing his error, he began extracting the handle from the pouch. Brunner gave a great harumph and stood with his hands on his hips, but Wulfgar pulled himself up and started over. Catibree started to call out to him, to jokingly warn him not to let the light-fingered halfling near Aegis Fang. But she was interrupted before she even began by an insistent telepathic call. A plea to her, she felt, but in some language she could not decipher. She glanced at the mithril door just down the way and crunched up her face curiously, seeing that liquid was spilling out around it, steaming and bubbling.
"Water?"
she whispered, and realized that the door had opened a crack. She gathered up the bow and quiver, slinging both over her shoulder, and moved to the door. She easily pulled it wide, revealing a low corridor beyond. She lifted her hand, the light from the spell she had placed upon her ring stealing the darkness before her, and revealing to her a series of puddles along the floor, fast evaporating, billowing steam, though the woman, protected from fire as she was, couldn't feel the heat.
"Girl!"
she heard Brunner call out as she entered the tunnel.
"Girl!"
he yelled more frantically, but his voice was cut short as the heavy metal door swung closed behind her. Catti Bree went to it and pushed, but it would not budge. Strangely, she was not afraid, and the voice in her head beckoned her along. She made her way down the tunnel, pausing at one puddle, where a broken pile of fast-cooling black rock lay. She found more of it along the path, like volcanic spit in a riverbed. But she could make no sense of it. She exited the tunnel into the steamy chamber, coming out right beside a pony-sized green spider that seemed to twitch at the sight of her. Catti Bree fell back and turned into a defensive crouch, her hand reflexively going to her bow. She shook her head and did not proceed, though, thinking that its movement must be a trick of her eye and the swirling steam of this place, for it seemed just a statue. A beautiful jade statue, shining green against her light spell, and so intricate in detail as to appear lifelike. Still, when it didn't move, Catti Bree couldn't focus on it. The room around it seemed full of surprises and oddly mixed shapes and items. To her right, beyond and above the spider, loomed tapestries of impossibly thick hanging webbing that shimmered and seemed alive in the pressing waves of steam. Roving her eye out to the left and across the floor, Catti Bree noted an altar, black and shot with veins of red, as if carrying blood throughout the solid stone. Just past it loomed the ledge and a large pile of broken lava rock, steaming feverishly. Just past it lay the pit, with water raining down from above and steam billowing up from below, and Catti Bree felt herself drawn to the lip to gaze in. She saw the swirling cyclone of living water, and saw the fiery eye far below, and knew that fiery eye to be the source of the whispers in her head. She closed her eyes tight and concentrated, trying to hear the call, and saw in her mind's eye this very room, and her focus moved down along the ledge to a bridge, an anteroom, a lever. Catti Bree opened her eyes, shaking her head, for she could make no sense of this. She heard the call of the fiery primordial again, and saw again the small room under an archway.